It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Forward Theater Company in Madison performs Clyde's, a Tony Award-nominated play about kitchen staff at a truck stop diner in which the cooks have all served a prison sentence. The stage run in Wisconsin, it includes these post-play conversations about when a person in prison prepares for release and transitions back into the community. Forward Theater partnered with a nonprofit, Just Dane. You can ask a question, share comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Linda Ketchum is executive director of Just Dane, providing resources for individuals and families involved in the criminal justice system. Linda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Yes. And Jen Apoff Gray here as well, artistic director of Forward Theater. Jen, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having us this morning.
Jen, let's start with you. This month, Forward Theater staging Clyde's. What themes in the play are you trying to give wider attention to in Wisconsin?
Sure. Well, anytime that the multi-Pulitzer Prize-winning author Lynn Nottage writes a new play, it's an exciting day in the American theater. So we were going to be interested in this play to begin with. And for several reasons. First of all, this is a really fun, warm, entertaining play set in a working kitchen, and you're watching this diverse and dynamic cast talk about their lives and make sandwiches and dream up sandwiches. And so starting out of the gate, the biggest draw was a chance to share this wonderful world with our audiences. But what we always love at Forward is when we can entertain and leave the audiences going home thinking about some of the issues that are most pressing here in our community. And so this play really fit that mold better than almost anything, because all of the characters in this play are formerly incarcerated and they are in a sense of a purgatory between the life they left in prison and the life they are dreaming of for themselves. And so the chance to show the full range of the humanity of these characters was so appealing. And I'm so glad that we've been able to work with community partners like Just Dane to help us tell the tale more authentically and fully.
Linda, your organization, Just Dane, collaborating with Forward Theater, as Jen describes there, and really amplifying the play's message. As you watch the play, how well does Clyde's portray people struggling to rejoin society after imprisonment?
The portrayal, the characters, Jen's description of it as purgatory is so apt. The experiences portrayed in the play are incredibly accurate. The individuals that come through our doors, you know, struggling to move past and heal from past trauma, to show people, you know, I'm ready. I need a second chance. I'm deserving of a second chance, right? We have a system that says when you do your time, then you come out and you resume your life. But yet we put in all sorts of barriers that prevent people from doing that. And we have, without getting too political, we have a lot of legislators who seem to profess one thing in terms of a faith tradition, but something quite the opposite when it comes to forgiveness and second chances. So, and I think you see that in the play and that level of trauma and life experiences and the pain that people experienced in their lives, both before incarceration, during incarceration, and then coming home. And it really is for many people. I mean, what you see in the play is people looking for hope, and they're finding it in the creation of sandwiches and dreaming of something better.
Jen, what messages come through in that art and pride of sandwich making? What is the message there?
I think there's a whole bunch of different messages, and this is a topic that comes up frequently at our talkbacks after every performance. You know, audiences will frequently ask us, what should we be taking away at the end of this play? What should we be thinking about? And I want to just say that I think the playwright has been very purposefully and artfully opaque on what she wants an individual audience member to take away, and has left the ending ambiguous in a way so that you might go home initially thinking about the necessary aspects of forgiveness, redemption, about solidarity. You might go home thinking about the aspects of the play may feel a little Pollyanna, to Linda's point, that these characters, I think, do end with some hope, and that may not be a realistic depiction of what they would face in the outside world. And I think what I've been hearing from our patrons who have contacted me a couple days or even a week or more after they've seen the play is that they keep thinking about this story, and what they think they're supposed to take away from it maybe changes as they ponder it. So I love a play like that that doesn't dictate to you what you're supposed to think about it, but just gets you thinking.
We're talking about the play Clydes with Forward Theater Artistic Director Jen Upoff-Gray. Justine Executive Director Linda Ketchum here. You can join in, call in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Linda Clyde and her kitchen staff, they're formerly incarcerated. Clyde tells her staff that no one other than her is willing to hire them, so that they must do what she demands. How often are formerly incarcerated people made to feel that their options are limited? How often might they find themselves in a demeaning work environment?
I think for most of the individuals that walk through our doors at Justine, it's incredibly common. I would say the vast majority of people returning home after incarceration face that, at least with one employer, this idea that, well, this is the best you're going to do, so you better just kind of suck it up and accept it. That there's a level, and we see that in housing as well with landlords. I mean, to be honest, there's this whole perception of once you've committed a crime, you've been imprisoned, and so you are just lucky to get whatever we decide we're going to give you. And that can lead to a lot of exploitation, both in the housing market, but in employment as well. Right now, it's a little easier because of the job market for people to find employment, but that doesn't mean the conditions of their employment are any better. So I think what we see in the play is pretty accurate in terms of what many people experience in their employment when they get out, and this idea that you just don't deserve anything better.
Jen, let's talk about the character Clyde, played by actor Dana Pelaban. What does Dana bring to this character?
Let me just start by saying that when I first read this play, Dana immediately came to mind for this title character, and not because she has so many similarities with Clyde. Dana is one of the loveliest and warmest humans that I know. So that was not it. But this is a woman, this character, who is strong, who is in charge, and who understands the world as it is. Now, the character expresses that with some degrees of cruelty, and that is obviously not Dana. But Dana is a woman who is strong and who is in charge and who understands the world as it is, in addition to the obviously necessary qualities of being a beautiful artist and a wonderful actress. I knew that on top of her acting skill, what she would bring to this is a deep understanding of the issues the characters in the play are facing, and an ability to tie that not just sort of globally to the issues of the formerly incarcerated population, but to our local issues here. And I knew that would be an enormous asset for everybody working on the play to have that expertise and empathy right there in the room as they crafted the story.
Jen Upoff-Gray is Artistic Director at Forward Theater Company in Madison. Linda Ketchum with us, Executive Director of Just Dane. Call in with a question. Share your perspective at any point. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As Forward Theater in Madison is set to wrap up a stage run of the Tony-nominated Broadway play Clydes, we explore the theater company's efforts to deepen the discussion about people striving to rebuild their lives after prison. Clydes is a play about formerly incarcerated staff of a truck stop diner. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Linda Ketchum with us, leads the nonprofit Just Dane, and Jen Upoff Gray, artistic director at Forward Theater. Jen, why should theater companies explore social issues?
Well, I think that there's an underlying set of assets to this particular art form. And as someone who was personally raised in a very activist family, I am always opportunistic for opportunities to leverage those assets. The first is that theater can be an extremely cathartic experience. So for someone who has an opportunity to see their own life experiences reflected in front of them on stage. And it is different on stage than in a film or television because you're there breathing the same air as those actors. Mm. That catharsis, that idea that goes back to the ancient Greeks, that you recognize yourself in someone else and you feel less alone. That's something theater does incredibly well. But even more important, particularly when you're looking at issues like incarceration, is theater's ability to build empathy. You see someone's story that isn't like your own, but told by people, again, living and breathing in the same space right in front of you. And it cannot help but broaden your understanding of the world. And I am very excited. You know, we are a company. We lead with entertainment and engagement and impact. And so we're never going to put a play up on our stage where it's like, let's lecture at you for 90 minutes about a topic. But when you can find something as entertaining as this play and feel that it is going to be an incredible opportunity for both catharsis and empathy building, it feels like a slam dunk. And this will be our largest selling 3-week show we've ever done in our 15-year history. And so I think there's a real case to be made that audiences appreciate that approach.
What are the people saying as they attend these post-play conversations with the actors? I mean, the cast takes questions from the audience at the end. What comes up?
They do. You know, it's a wonderful range. There's a lot of discussion of, you know, as I was saying earlier, what do we feel the takeaway mm-hmm. ideas of the mm-hmm. plot are? There's a lot of discussion about wanting to know the actor's process of preparing to do these roles, both on the level of really understanding the challenges that might be faced by their formerly incarcerated characters, but also folks want to know how they learned their nice skills and how to juggle all the sandwich making that are on stage. So we really get the gamut. Every talk back is a little bit different, but they've been hugely attended. We've had 160 people staying every night for these 20-minute talkbacks. So they've been fantastic.
How do your actors feel about being involved in these conversations and connecting directly with audience members in discussion, in conversation?
I think it's incredibly fulfilling. It's a wonderful reminder. It's a visceral reminder of what theater can do and the impact that the work that they just did on that stage is having. And I think that there's appreciation for this opportunity to feel that so deeply and to see and hear the impact that their work is having. I think that's really affirming.
Linda, how is Just Dane contributing to performances?
You know, one of the things we've been doing is having a presence there for through our Just Bakery mm-hmm. training program. So we've had members of our Just Bakery crew there selling cookies, but answering questions, talking with the audience members. We've had conversations, you know, with Jen and some of the actors leading up to this, been promoting, because it really is a powerful It's really a powerful play, and it's entertaining. But as Jen said, that ability to try to build empathy, and one of the other ways that we're kind of trying to build on the play is to offer a reentry simulation. So that's something our organization developed back in 1998, and we've been doing it since then. We've done them around the country. It's an opportunity for people to kind of participate in this large role play and get a glimpse into the first 30 days someone experience their experiences when they come out of prison, those first 30 days. So we'll be doing a community simulation that we've also been promoting at our little table in the theater. And that'll be on December 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Christ Presbyterian Church. And people can register for that through our Facebook page or through our website. So it's another way, I think, to continue the messaging of the play and to continue to help build empathy so that people really get a glimpse into what that's like. And obviously we can't recreate entirely that situation, but it really, it gives a glimpse into it. And I think, you know, we just so appreciate the visibility of the challenges and the barriers that the play and the Forward Theater is providing on this issue. That whatever we can do to support it. So promoting it, we've had some staff from our Just Bakery program, again, as I said, talking with actors. I will say one of the things, the set is incredible. You feel like you're in a diner in the kitchen. I was sitting next to our Just Bakery manager during the play. And I will say, in terms of all the knife skills and everything, the only comment that she had was, in real life, they'd be wearing gloves. So, otherwise, which is high praise coming from our Just Bakery manager. So, in terms of the authenticity.
Oh, I love that. I love that comment. We're talking about the play Clydes. We have Justine Executive Director Linda Ketchum with us and Forward Theater Artistic Director Jen Apoff Gray. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234. You know, I wonder, Linda, as you mentioned the simulation, do simulations bring people closer to this issue if they can just return to their lives once it's over?
Well, certainly they can. I mean, certainly, you know, we each make that decision, right? Mm-hmm, we make our own decisions about, am I going to engage more in this? Am I going to take something away from this that changes me in some way? I love how Brian Stevenson and Just Mercy describes it as, when we're in proximity, proximity changes us. And when we're changed, we can change the world. So that's part of the goal of that simulation, because you are interacting in this way, in this role play, but then as part of the experience as well, we have a panel discussion. So people will meet and talk with and have a chance to ask questions of individuals who have walked that journey home, who are currently still engaged and involved in the justice system, who are still dealing with the struggles of things like being on extended supervision for 5 more years and having all these rules that violating any single one of them, while not a crime, could land you back in prison. So that's the other part of the experience, is really being in proximity and having that chance to talk with people about their experiences and ask more. And then if people are wanting to engage more, we have a number of volunteer opportunities for them to engage with our agency as volunteers in our Circles of Support program, or just a wide array of volunteer opportunities.
Lots of different ways to get involved. Jen, you know, Sunday afternoon being the last performance of Clydes at Overture Center in Madison, and you've had, it sounds like, a really good run here. When you look at the 2-time Pulitzer Prize winner, Lynn Nottage, and it's a comedy, how did Nottage infuse comedy in this play that deals with a topic that is so serious, so fraught in Wisconsin and across our society?
Well, I think she dealt with it via comedy because, well, first of all, it's true to life, mm-hmm. that the heart of the circumstances, I think, you search for humor, you search for things to laugh at and moments of joy. But also, this is a savvy, savvy woman who wrote this play. It's much more impactful this way. If she wrote a play that said, and now I'm going to take you on a tragic journey into the heart of the experience of the formerly incarcerated, the number of people who are going to buy a ticket to come and see that play is very small and probably made up of the people who are already involved in and informed in about these issues. When you say, hey, come watch a play set in the kitchen of a sandwich shop, and they're going to make sandwiches, in front of you and dream about the building the perfect sandwich, and it's really fun. A whole bunch of people are going to come and see that play who may not have given a single thought to the plight of the formerly incarcerated in our community. And they're not going to be misled. They're going to get a funny and entertaining play about sandwich making, but they're also going to walk out having hopefully broadened their perspective. And that's the way to do it, in my opinion.
Jen and Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
you. Yeah, thank you.
Jen Upoff Gray, Artistic Director at Forward Theater Company in Madison. Linda Ketchum is Executive Director of Just Dane. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. That song is 12 to 1. Singer, songwriter, and rapper Dessa has dropped a new studio album. It's called Bury the Lead. The Minneapolis based artist kicked off the Midwest leg of her tour in Eau Claire Tuesday, and Dessa performs Sunday in Madison. We explore the album's themes and its Wisconsin connections along the way. You can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dessa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. This album blending hip hop and pop and danceable beats. What themes and feelings do you want us to explore and absorb in this new effort?
Yeah, you know, I think for most of my career, I have leaned into what is my natural, pretty melancholic disposition, and I get teased about it, but also I felt really comfortable doing that. You know, I think being blue is a big part of life, or at least it's been a big part of mine. And then, you know, after experiencing the kind of collective fear and loss, and kind of wash and waste of pain that was the pandemic together, you know, I felt like nobody really needs to underscore the pain part of life. Like, that's really well understood at the moment on the news and in our homes and private lives as well. And so this was the first record that I've done that kind of leans into, like you said, you know, a poppier sound, a dancier sound, but at the same time, it does so, I hope, without blinders on the eyes, you know. So this is very much like, hey, there is an existential threat at every door and window. A dance party might be the reasonable response. You know, it's like the storm is coming. Buy some booze and have some friends over and be alive while you are. Yeah.
Can a pop song do that? Mm. Can it lift us in such a way, but you know, still have some gotcha moments that make us think moments?
I mean, I hope so. I think there is sort of like a convention in pop that need not be adhered to, which is there's this presumption that if something has like a radio sound, and by that I mean, you know, it's accessible enough to be played like while you're driving, that if it's got big, strong melodies and that kind of, you know, move your body beat, that one must of necessity sort of like dial down, dial back, or even dumb down the lyrics a little bit. I like songs about going to the club, some of them, you know, I think there's a place for that, but I think there's also a place, like, I don't think you have to, I think the lowest common denominator in pop has been set like way too low. And I think you can have smart lyrics and still have a pop sensibility. So that's what this record tries to do anyway. I guess listeners will have to be the final arbiters of whether or not that worked.
Well, let's hear part of Hurricane Party, the first song on your album.
The kiddie pool up with Prosecco, get the LEDs on, need the spectacle, gotta beat the one last week, let's get a record. If you're trying to be a go-getter, you gotta go and get it. Desperate times call for desperate pleasures, some legitimate headlines, mostly cries for attention. The camera speeds, copy ready to read, ought to be a good night. We're live in 3, 2, dang man, busted on a hot because it's a hurricane party.
This song alluding to media coverage cries for attention. But as you said, there's also a party going on, very different good and bad things vying for our attention. How do you suggest we sort it all out?
So, you know, in that song, I was really the metaphor is a borrowed one, and it's pretty literal in that, you know, places in our country where, and maybe others too, where hurricanes are a regular occurrence and a regular threat, people really do have hurricane parties, which is to say, like, yo, the storm is coming. This isn't one I'm evacuating for. And they like provision up, you know, get the food, get the water, get the booze, and like batten down the hatches, cover the windows, and have friends over to party and wait out the storm. And I was really attracted to that because it's not, you know, that kind of like deliberate knowing hedonism doesn't turn your head off, right? It's not it's not blind to the fact that we're mortal and aging and vulnerable. It's because of the fact that we're mortal and aging and vulnerable that we're having a house party right now. And and I liked that idea of sort of like a hedonism that isn't just bodily, which is just to say, yo, even in best of circumstances, like our time here is brief, and there ought to be, hopefully, you know, some deliberate moments of pleasure and abandon, because else, like, what's all the worry for? Do you know what I mean? Like, what are we concerned about safeguarding if we're not making room for some of that too?
I do hope you can perform that song in New Orleans. I think I'll just stop it there. But it would be most fitting. And I lived in Louisiana for many years, so yes.
Oh, really?
Hurricane party. I can hear that. You know, you came up in the music scene of Minneapolis. And you've said the environment is unusual because artists and bands of different genres often mix, often play shows together. How did that lack of boundaries or that blurring influence your music?
Yeah, you know, I think that those borders, the line, you know, the painted lines between the genres can be a little bit more enthusiastically patrolled in cities where you've got like a really, really strong major label, major media infrastructure, right? Because that you sort of have these, okay, this label specializes, you know, in this sound, and this is a business entity or an agent or a club that has this kind of show. And I think in Minneapolis, there was sort of a natural slurry, you know, that people who liked one another's stuff, even if they sounded really different, were game to share a bill, meaning, you know, they would be game to play on the same night on the same stage. And then culturally, that led to like an expectation as a showgoer that you might see, you know, in my career anyway, I've played with like a choir and then a metal band and then
orchestra,
a rap crew, and then an orchestra. Yeah. So, I think we do have sort of like a more permeable understanding of genres. Granted, I think also the world has changed a little bit, you know, since
and people
a lot
listen
of it,
to but a bunch of different stuff. It's not like they just focused on one specific genre in listening.
I agree. I totally agree. And I think that's also changed. You know, I think it might have been more the case like 15 years ago that people were kind of flying those band shirts as a flag of affiliation. Like, I am a kind of kid who listens to only emo, or I'm a kind of kid who listens to only, you know, indie backpack rap or whatever. And I think that's relaxed. I think that's good.
Talking with Minneapolis-based musician and writer Dessa, set to perform in Wisconsin this weekend. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm in the mood to listen to more music, so let's hear part of another song from Bury the Lead. This is What If I'm Not Ready?
I ran away young with a kite and a water gun, looking for a fight, pretty quick to find some. Hair tucked up in a Lakers cap, flipped it like a soft pack, smoked it last. Walking on the yellow line, ahead and write your traffic ticket. I thought I was hard as fuck, I thought I was on a mission. Jump cut to the present days, look at the same sharp tone, same long face. Pride is my problem, I know that's right, but that don't solve it. I don't like favors, I
don't like debts I can't prepare. I don't like making anything less than my own way. What if I'm not ready?
So that chorus, I don't like debts I can't repay. I don't like making anything less than my own way. How does that inform, you know, you personally at this point in your career? Do you still have doubts about your abilities?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think all of us with at least all of us that have a reasonable understanding of, you know, social relations have cause to be uncertain or anxious. Absolutely. In short, to say, I still get stage fright. You know, I still worry if I've got the skills it takes to present a particular song, or get nervous about trying something big. But I think that song, to be honest, is more about like the personal sphere. That's probably one of the more like overtly kind of tender and vulnerable songs, I think, on the record, where that one's like, hey, I think I found a great dude and I'm panicking. It was really sweet. You know, we performed that one for the first time actually yesterday on stage at First Avenue.
How did that feel? How did it feel?
You know, it was so sweet. It was so sweet in part because of the rehearsal that we'd had a few days before, where the women who sang on stage with me, who are like musician veterans, super mega talented voices, Aviva J and Lady Midnight, who will be opening for me. Yeah, in Manhasset. And they came over to my apartment where I'm sitting right now, and we were practicing the harmonies, and they both in like a heavy one eyebrow up way said, I feel this one. And I thought, oh man, it hadn't even occurred to me that like, I think for women who are, you know, my age and also who've like, This industry, it can be a tricky one to try to balance with personal relationships. You're on the road, you keep mega weird hours, and also you're passionate enough about it that you're willing to spend a lot of time doing it. And all three of those things can sort of make romance, you know, and like deep connection difficult. And it felt so sweet to have two other women who knew what I was talking about.
And I want, I want to acknowledge Mega Weird Hours, because you just have come off a sold out show at First Ave, and you're up with us doing this. Do you feel on tour, do you feel like you find newfound energy? How do you keep it going? And, you know,
no, emphatic no. And forgive me for my total candor here, but when I got the invite to do this show, I was so stoked, because I'm a big public radio nerd, yeah, you know, and I have been since I was three. And I went, ooh, 8 a.m. after a First Stab show. Is there any way we could do 8:30 a.m.? And you and your production team was kind enough. Man, did I read when it said be on the Zoom at 8:28.
No,
I was
means
on
no.
at 8:27 and a half. So no, you guys were so sweet. But yeah, I think for me, like, touring is my favorite and my least favorite part of the job. I love travel. I love having the opportunity to, yeah, like, move around the country and share some feelings. And it's tricky, you know, it's hard on your knees, it's hard on your back, and it mangles your sleep patterns pretty well. But but yeah, I think taking it in like short bursts, then going home to do laundry and, you know, get your mail, has for me been part of a long-term strategy.
Singer, rapper, and writer Dessa is touring with a new solo album. It's called Bury the Lead. Weekend tour stop in Madison. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts with the artist Dessa. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show, and this is a song, Chopper, on the Ideas Network.
Keep the radio on.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're hearing the song Long Wave as we tap into the creative process of Minneapolis musician Dessa. Explore her inspirations, embracing different genres of music. The singer, rapper, and writer is touring with a new album called Bury the Lead with stops in Wisconsin. Call in with the question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. So, Dessa, I cringe a little bit every time I hear Bury the Lead because, you know, in our profession, it's that we fail to convey the most important part of a story. So thanks. Thanks a lot, you know, for calling us out. You know, what's the most important story you're trying to tell here? Why this album name?
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I will say that I am just sort of a sucker for like journalistic slang of any variety. So aesthetically, you know, it's its own appeal. But also, you know, I guess I like the idea of kind of sublimation, meaning like no matter what kind of discomfort or challenges that we're facing in our personal or professional lives, like very often the buried lead, like the root of the issue is elemental. We're looking for connection. We're afraid of loss. We're afraid of death. We want to be liked. And I think those really, you know, that handful of drives sort of combine and recombine in all sorts of fanciful permutations. And you end up with, you know, office stress. You end up, you know, worrying about, you know, a friendship that's failing. You end up sleeping on the couch, whatever it is. But really, there are only a handful of fundamental drives that seem to contribute to a lot of that impulse to write a song in the first place, those big questions, you know, that kind of that existential angst.
But there's still time to relax and step away from that churn and that angst to just have fun and to, you know, hear a good song. So, I mean, here's a bit of a technical question. You rap, you sing often, you know, in the same song, but at different registers. How do you decide which lyric is better conveyed by one approach or the other?
Sure. That's a good question. You know, I think some of it has to do with density, like generally you can deliver a rap lyric at quite a clip, you know, so you can really, if you have something to explain that takes a lot of words, a lot of ink, you can do that well in a rap lyric. And very often the song lyrics are delivered, you know, in a more legato way, right? So like the syllable count per bar is lower. And so if you have, you know, the big kind of emotional through line is often stated in the hook, in the chorus, which is sung, and then restated as it comes around again. And then you can think of verses as almost like the vignettes or the snapshots that combine to support or justify that big emotional statement. But also, I think a lot of it is just, you know, every once in a while I've sort of like sung over a beat as I'm trying to figure it out and then said, okay, well, maybe I should make this twice as fast and with fewer notes. And then it's somewhere in that, you know, no man's land between rapping and singing. So even with my collaborators, Laserbeak and Andy Thompson, you know, who I made the record with, if I said how many rap songs are on this record, we might have different numbers because some of those songs exist kind of right in a gray area.
Kind of in a no man's land there. Where do you like to write best? Where do you find the most productive writing atmosphere?
I mean, I admit that a significant amount of writers, like I don't revel in the writing process very often. It is onerous, frustrating. It feels really good to have just finished a song, like way better than working on the song, you know, when it finally snaps in and you got it and you know it. But I walk sometimes, particularly if a song is proving difficult, you know, very often the progress on it is just, oh, it feels glacial. You know, you walk around the lake twice and you've got like 13 bars of music, you know, so 15 seconds of lyrics to show for it. So I'm a slow writer. Every once in a while, you know, I'll get hit by a lightning bolt of a particular like image I'm excited about or a rhyming couplet. But for me, it's pretty slow.
The song Decoy on the album demonstrates your rapid fire, confident rapping. Let's take a listen.
Not a side piece or a wife piece, I'm a think piece. If you're done then, take your dishes to the sink, please. Wash to the right, dry to the left. Mind is a kite and the fall is a mess. Out of office, out of body. Sorry, not sorry, with a busted rib. Ain't a thing to do about it, just tape and time. And then you take the turn again, leaning harder. Hope the road won't burn so bad this time. You read your curve, fast as fit to swerve. Put the money to the metal, come and get your girl. To the lights blur, to the lines meet. In the middle of the high beams and the white burst. Keep time with the heartbeat. To your head a nerve, to your head a nerve, to your head a nerve.
Okay, well, tell us about Decoy. What is the song about?
Yeah, I think for me, Decoy is, you're right, one of the rappier songs on the record. And it is sort of, you know, the feeling of kind of moving through space, through time, a little bit unmoored. And that's a feeling that is familiar to me. You know, I'm eager, in part, maybe I found music and art because I'm eager to sort of try to plant a flag or like gain some purchase as time is sweeping by, make, you know, do something that feels, at least in my small pool, that feels contributive. And I've always, you know, since I was like 11, maybe younger, I've always been sort of uncomfortable about the idea of life passing at this fixed rate that you're helpless to slow, to stop, to pause, to take a breath. And so probably some of that feeling is routed into that tune. And then also, as you heard, you know, in that verse, there's some gendered stuff too. You know, what it's like to be a woman, at least as I've experienced. You know, the second verse that we just broke from there starts with smoky eye because the mind's on fire. And I think I've always been sort of interested, attracted, but also troubled by our relationship with beauty and youth in this culture.
We heard from Martha in Menominee, called in to say that you have one of the best quotes ever in the music business, and it's, "No one's name is Hey Sound Guy." And Martha really appreciates that sentiment.
Aw, thank you so much. Well, a great time to shout out the engineer, Joe, who I was talking with a little earlier today before you and I connected, Kate.
Oh, well, I want to just land here that I understand your mother owns a grass-fed cattle farm in northwestern Wisconsin. So how did your mom end up a farmer in Wisconsin?
Oh, man. Deep cut. My mom grew up Puerto Rican in the Bronx, but she read this book, Silent Spring, which is an environmental seminal
Rachel
text.
Carson. Yes.
Boom. Yes. And she was really moved by it. And I think that for her was a turning point where she started to have these dreams of, you know, like prairie grass for her is where she was called to go. And so she moved in her early 20s to Minnesota, met my dad, did the thing. Here I am. And after a long career doing like public relations, she'd always been involved in the organic movement and finally pulled over the side of the road and made an offer on 5 cows that she saw pasturing. At the end of her career, she bought them and started a herd, which to me sounds like my mother is like Jack and the Beanstalk. And yeah, I think at first I was worried, to be honest, about her getting kicked by a cow. But now at a remove, it's like, hey, that fearlessness.
And that's
that
her. Just, that's her. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a model. It's a model for me.
So. Dessa, thank you so much for joining us. All the best on the tour.
Thank you so much for having me. Hope to see those of you in Madison.
Yes.
On Sunday night.
Dessa, rapper, singer, and writer. New album, Bury the Lead, member of the Minneapolis-based hip-hop collective Doomtree. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Dog and see what home.